The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Tuesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Futures are off the early morning lows as we get some encouraging commentary on some supply chain production restarts from Intel, Samsung, Toyota, as well as some decent guidance on Q3 from American, Signet, Fastenal, all ahead of the big bank earnings beginning tomorrow. Our roadmap begins with Southwest cancellation chaos, though, the airline denying that a vaccine mandate backlash is behind the trouble, and we will check in with Gary Kelly this hour.
Plus, speaking of businesses in Texas, that state bans vaccine mandates on all entities, including private businesses. So how will businesses respond? And what does that mean for the return to the office trend?
And watching the vaccines, CureVac shelves the development of its most advanced COVID-19 vaccine candidate. And Moderna now says that data does support a booster. We're going to start, though, with the cancellations at Southwest. We'll talk to Gary Kelly in about half an hour. Jim, you've got a long list of questions you want answered, large, just about labor relations with the carrier.
Yeah, look, a lot of things have not been answered yet, and I do put out what I am looking at. You can get it if you're a member of the Investor Club. And I'm not satisfied with anything I've heard. I'm not satisfied with the Captain Casey saying, "Listen, it's just scheduling, and it's hub and spoke." I'm not satisfied with what the representative of Southwest Air has said. The representative is Gary Kelly. But I am satisfied that Gary Kelly's coming on, and that is going to change the tenor of what's going on.
Yeah, he typically is very straightforward with us. We've interviewed him countless times, and he's always willing to entertain questions of all types. So I am looking forward to that as well, given there seems to still be a lot of confusion about exactly what has been behind this significant slowdown and or cancellations that have occurred in their service.
We're talking about Southwest Air. We're talking about the machine. I've been recommending Southwest Air since Gary came in. How can you not? They're the best-run airline in the country. Or are they? And I think that that's what Gary has to answer to. I mean, when you're talking about culture, and there's Phil going back and forth about culture. Like, culture? I thought the culture was unassailable there. It doesn't feel that way anymore.
Yeah. There were many years where they were on the other side of labor strife, where they had relative peace, and the large unions of the legacy carriers were embroiled in various disputes. There is this discussion of the hub and spoke route network, though, and the way in which it depends on Florida.
But it's worked for years. Suddenly it's a problem. I mean, wow, I woke up in Southwest Air. What they've been doing doesn't work. I mean, yeah, there was someone this morning on Brian Sullivan's talking about they do a 15-minute turnaround versus 30, and it can cause the problems. David, when something's worked for years, we discover that it's the problem. I'm not buying it.
You're not.
No. I'm not buying it.
Well, a lot of the scheduling is making assumptions about traffic, and maybe they were just running it hot.
But this is Southwest. They say we're not going to do a lot. We're going to furlough a lot of people, and then they come back, and then they're going to put more flights on for Columbus Day. And then, is this Southwest Air, or is this the Keystone Cops? I mean, Southwest Air does what's right. And that, like, what I love about Gary is they're smarter than everybody else. Now, do you know that the pilots, even talking about how their information technology is not good? I mean, Dave, they underspent. Did they underspend on IT? Southwest is king of IT.
That would be surprising. Listen, I don't have answers. We're going to ask the questions. I know you have plenty of them.
We all do.
Well,
I just am
Kelly,
struck.
And we'll see what we find.
He is the best there is.
Meanwhile, let's talk about the stock price and or the airlines overall, Jim, at this point. I mean, we can see Southwest shares seem poised to at least go up a bit in the early going here. They were down yesterday.
Oh, yeah. The others were up.
Well, you got American. American weighs in today. Says Q3 revenue should be at the high end.
Yeah.
They're looking for a dollar loss. Estimates at $1.15. Q3 revenue down 25 on a two-year stack. Prior guidance was 24 to 28. That I'll take that.
Oh, yeah. And I think Delta, when Delta reports, I think Delta's going to be the star of the show. I think Delta's going to be, dare I say it, Southwest.
All right.
Delta's
well, maybe,
become Southwest.
Do you own Southwest in the investment club?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, I do not. I would have at one time, but I think I'm now want to know whether Ed Bastian.
You don't own any airlines in the investment club.
No, I'm back to the way it was during when I was at Goldman Sachs in the 80s, where the cost of capital, you start worrying about what's going on.
Well, for decades, they didn't earn their cost of capital.
And they started selling at 6x earnings. You wanted to figure out why that was.
And then they had this incredible move where, you know, obviously. But I'm not pricing became a lot more, made a lot more sense, and they charge you for every last little nickel and dime you for everything, and
it turned out
they actually worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the only travel and leisure one I'm in is Wynn, because I think people got much too negative on Macau. If you talk, let's say you were talking to a guy like Steve Wynn back in 2016, 600,000 jobs. I mean, the Chinese, they need jobs. I mean, I know that sounds odd. The Chinese, they run everything, so to speak. But Kyle Bass talking about, by the way, they're going to run Taiwan. But I come back and say, I've got Evergrande. How many Evergrandes are there? Now, Evergrande's obviously really big, but we got some others that are coming up. Cynic. When is Cynic coming up? I mean, and Cynic, not like C-Y-N-I-C, although it should be. S-I-N-I-C.
Yeah.
No. For all the dominance that China's supposed to give us, David,
yes,
it does feel like a bit of a house of apartment cards.
They've got a great deal of property that isn't being lived in, that's been developed, that has resulted in enormous debt loads being amassed by these companies, and if they can't sell as quickly, it becomes more difficult to service that debt. And there's a level of speculation. We've made the point many times. The Chinese, as a percentage of their wealth and a place to store wealth, real estate is a much more significant asset than it is even here.
Well, the communists never seem
because
to
they don't really invest as often in the stock market, which hasn't done much of anything when you go back and look for 5 years.
Well, they don't have like Bel Air houses. They have apartments. You're not allowed to have Beverly Hills places. Did you see that? Do you follow Arjun? Arjun Karpal, our guy in Asia.
No, yeah, I must.
Guy,
but
the
I
guy's
don't,
awesome. Yeah. He cycled past the Evergrande office. It now has police fencing all around and a permanent police bus parked. I mean, this is China. You're not allowed to have protests? What the hell?
The Journal's been doing some very good reporting on it. I mean, we have to rely on others, frankly, other than our own Eunice Yoon, who's on the ground and does such a great job for us as well. But talking about Xi, and now they're looking at the relationship between the state-owned banks and or state-owned entities, even the CIC, which is the giant sovereign fund, and the private businesses.
People know the state-owned problems. The state-owned have had no discipline. They've had problems.
Right, so they continue to, now they're looking more closely at that.
Right. Are the Johnny Walker Blue Days over?
Remember, I think they are. Yeah, I think they may very well be. A lot of this designed to ensure that he gets another five-year term, which obviously would be out of the ordinary, to say the least, because typically premiers have served for 2 5-year terms and then called it a day, but she's going to go for another five and maybe even beyond that.
Well, I wish they'd fix their banking situation, because while they may be all powerful and doing maneuvers near an island, on an island that's next to Taiwan.
The giant Chinese tech companies have had a nice move lately in the stock market.
Because apparently he's not targeting them anymore. He's now targeting the banks. I mean, you can't target everybody. Even President Xi. I mean, you kind of run out of people to target. I mean, people doing the targeting. I mean, he's got these different people who target, and they're going against the number two. This guy
got a pretty significant surveillance state there, so they may be able to individually target every single person.
They could put your head on someone, have you say things that you don't say, and we would all say, Faber's lost his mind, and he should go to work for the network that AT&T has been backing. See that stuff?
That was an interesting story, wasn't it?
Why not? It's about
AT&T
stock.
Encouraging the creation.
We never talked about that stock, about what happened with AT&T in that story.
OAN, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Well, certainly John Oliver and some of his colleagues at CNN have taken AT&T to task for financing a organization that argues some questionable things about vaccines and the election.
I think it's a good thing.
Without a doubt. Now, we got to remember that it will no longer be owned by AT&T. It will be run by David Zaslav, at some point next year. Yeah,
but you know why it's a good thing?
Why?
It's kept me from focusing on the stock for 3 minutes. This is stock breakdown 26. and that yield gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Step by step, inch by inch, slowly, slowly that stock falls.
Slowly, and then suddenly, yeah, the yield is 8%, but the yield is not going to be. Even the yield, though, on what will be the remaining AT&T, which is going to be cut, is going to be fairly significant, certainly above that of Verizon.
I wish they'd come on Squawk on the Street. We have a frank discussion.
I mean, the question again, Moffat Nathanson's note from last week, $20 billion of free cash flow. Will they hit the $20 billion? $8.5 billion will be devoted to the dividend. This is new AT&T. We got to get ready for this, and shareholders do as well.
But they warmed up to it. I was disappointed.
Meanwhile, our parent company's flat on the year. Flat. Back to down 0.34%. Comcast shares have been in free fall. Charter as well. Altice.
You have to use the word free fall.
Yeah, free fall. And they keep, look at this. And there's another one. Deutsche Bank gets in on it. Who knew? I didn't even know they had research anymore. The Deutsche Bank, competitive
they
bites.
They came out.
They downgrade
under,
Charter and Altice.
From under a rock, they came out and just slagged us. And all of a sudden,
I mentioned it because it's about AT&T's competition with cable through
like
fiber
can
that they are
less. They don't have two nickels. By the way, how many people, all three pieces say the same thing. The halcyon days are over. I didn't even know we were in halcyon. Did you know we were in halcyon?
I didn't. But you never do when you're in them.
Did
it's only
Google
when you look
halcyon?
Back. It's only when you look back and you realize, oh, those
were
the good old
days. What we had at 62.
Yeah. These are the good old days. Oh, my God, look at that chart. Oh, it's worse than K2 where all those climbers died.
Well, a lot of that involves sort of the pandemic broadband demand that we went through as you stayed home. Speaking of staying home versus going to the office, some new data shows that employees are going back to the office as new COVID cases decline. Castle Systems, which tracks office check-in, says that in the past week, back to work 10-city average hit a new high since the pandemic began. Occupancy now averaging 36.1%. One of the points they make, Jim, is that more workers, it's not that they're being asked to come back. They're voluntarily coming back because cases are down.
I think that fear has been an underreported upon issue. When 700,000 people die more than the Civil War, you start thinking, well, I don't want to die. I mean, that's a powerful reason not to go to work. I think that the key person to talk about this is James Gorman from Morgan Stanley.
Okay.
Because James Gorman has basically said, listen, you know, we're vaccinated. Let's go to work. I often find, I mean, I have three Modernas. So I was listening to that excellent piece on Squawk on the Street that made it Squawk Box. They made it so I couldn't talk during Squawk Box. And even the person's talking about how three vaccines are great. Well, I went into CVS. I said, I like my third vaccine. They said, fine, get it. And now, you know, I feel like a king. I mean, I'm tired of seeing the people. I'm sorry.
No, you're saying it's a health issue, but most of these CEOs will say, will say that it's not. It's people wanting to not, you know, to do whatever they want to do. Except not come into the office.
What are the point of the vaccines? What are the point? I mean, like, hey, I'm afraid of smallpox. Whoa, look out.
But listen,
polio,
first of all, these numbers are incredible in the sense of we're 19 months into the pandemic and only 36% of people are coming to the office. I've made the point many times. We all have these conversations with people who run large and smaller organizations. Nobody's coming back to the office 5 days a week, period. James Gorman may want them in the office 5 days a week. Maybe they're getting close there. Maybe they're getting close to Goldman Sachs. They're not. Friday is basically no-go territory.
I feel like
it will be forever.
Friday. We have a
Thursday
game.
And most companies I speak to are going to be 2-3 or 3-2. That's it. Flexibility is now a key part of the offering for employees. And if you do not offer them that flexibility of workplace,
they'll go somewhere
else. They will go somewhere else.
Oh, well, you know, good luck.
I mean, well, you know what? A lot of CEOs have said exactly that, and now they're saying, I was wrong. I got to offer flexibility. That's what I'm hearing. So we may look at 36, and maybe it'll get to 50, or maybe it'll even get to 75 during 3 days of the week. But what it actually means for a lot of downtown areas and cities, and certainly this one and many others, is going to be a significant question for their economic development.
What an opportunity.
Because you're not going to have the same amount of people
coming. When I ran
my hedge
fund, you had to work 6 days a week, which I thought was great. You could take over every religious holiday one Saturday or Sunday. 6 days a week was right. And now I think there's room, Carl, for some company that says, do you want to make a lot of money? Come 5 days. Come 5 days. No, you know, no Zoom. We're going to ban Zoom. We'll ban WebEx. We'll ban Teams. We're going to ban FaceTime.
Wow. I don't know. Amazon, which had been definitely in the you're coming back camp.
Yes.
Andy Jassy, long on our air, said innovation can happen remotely. now saying it's up to the local manager.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you.
Up to the local manager.
Jim, the workforce is making the decision here, not the boss.
The workforce doesn't know enough.
They may not.
How about if you're a first, second, or third-year person at Facebook? How do you show that you're going to advance?
I don't listen.
How?
I don't know. I think young people who would be staying home, sitting in an apartment all day, are making a mistake from a mental health perspective as well.
Domino's Pizza reports this week. Great numbers, probably.
You know, what do I know? They're not going to listen to me.
Why not? You're a powerful
force. I'm a dinosaur.
You're a powerful force.
I'm a parent. I'm an old man. They're not interested. Hit the road.
They want to get paid to watch Squid. I got young people with pay. Look, I watch Squid. How much will you pay me?
Yep.
What? That's not a job? A whole new definition of jobs, by the way.
We will take a break and take a look at the futures here. A lot more to get to ahead of as they hug again. J.P. Morgan, of course, will kick off the earnings season in earnest tomorrow. But for the time being, watching oil closing above 80 for the first time since 2014, up four straight days. We're back in a moment.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
We continue to keep stock of the energy market as oil trades above 80, closes above 80 yesterday for the first time since 2014. Again, yesterday, Jim, J.P. Morgan came out, said that if you adjust for inflation and the intensity with which we use energy relative to GDP, that the market can sustain itself with oil anywhere between 130 and 150.
I agree with that. I remember the late Oregon Clinton telling me, think about how much milk costs and how much gasoline costs. And how much harder it is to get gasoline to the store than it is to get cow to the store, you know, farm to table, cow to store. And I agree. I mean, the thing is not kept up pace with inflation. I am not freaked out by oil. I do think that when last Wednesday was the top of natural gas, I believe in Europe, when Putin said, hey, listen, you know what, maybe we ought to have more. I mean, he was starving Europe, but they say nothing because they're so scared of Putin. They are. Everyone's scared of the Russians and the Chinese. I have CrowdStrike tonight. 9 out of 10 people, according to my friend John Ellis, are concerned about cybercrime. I mean, the Russians are just thugs. We just don't talk about them as thugs. We talk about them as a member of the Council of Nations.
No, I think we do in part talk about
what
them.
Show?
As,
what show do we talk about?
Well, you just did anyway. We've referred to them. I mean, they are running kind of a criminal enterprise
off,
over there.
They shut off Europe. They shut off NatGas, Gazprom. Do you know that we could have provided all the NatGas they need? There are states in Europe, actually called countries, that actually have enough natural gas because they contracted with Cheniere. What?
European and Asian gas prices. There's an interesting note this morning from Citi saying that recent pullback after the parabolic rise that we've talked about, and we're talking here in Europe where the prices are so far beyond what we're paying here, doesn't mean the winter price shock's over. The market's only grown more uncertain since September. China decided to secure energy at all costs, as you say.
Right.
And global hoarding increases, just as Putin spoke of raising Russian-European gas exports.
Right.
With limited evidence of capacity to do so.
Right.
Such push-pull drivers on top of weather uncertainty should keep prices already above fundamentally justified levels, volatile as well.
That's possible. Rusty Brazil, my go-to, just says, don't forget the European environmental laws have made it very difficult for normal business to be done. And we all know that Europe is much tougher. I had Plug Power on last night, hydrogen. Andy Marsh said Europe is way ahead of us. Now, maybe we can get a $3 subsidy and we can do okay, but Europe is just really moving fast toward electric and hydrogen, and that's causing a lot of havoc, too. They're going electric over there. They're going hydrogen. We're going ICE.
Hydrogen.
We could do hydrogen.
Yeah, except the differential is pretty large. Wes Edens was on with Morgan yesterday talking about that. I mean, that, you know, we've got to lessen that.
There's Chuck Schumer's trying to, Senator Schumer, excuse me, trying to put together, Andy Marsh from Plug Power says $3 per kilogram subsidy, which would make it so that hydrogen is really in the ballpark, particularly if we could use solar. So I don't rule out hydrogen for long haul.
Yep. I know you've been bullish on hydrogen for a very long time.
Green hydrogen produces no, there's nothing. I mean, green hydrogen is the answer, unless you're Elon Musk, who doesn't really care for it.
Right.
Elon's not been, what's he been up to?
He's selling his solar panels.
Is he?
We've talked about, his
door to door.
He's been busy. He was in Europe and Germany showing off the factory, the Giga Factory.
China sales last month.
I know.
56,000.
He has everything.
He visited the outer atmosphere?
Maybe he didn't. I'm jealous of him.
When's Shatner going up? Soon?
Any day now.
When we come back, as Jim said earlier, don't miss our live interview with Southwest CEO Gary Kelly. We'll talk about these cancellations and some of the labor strife. In the meantime, futures close to the highs of the session. Squawk on the Streets back in just a moment.
Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create. Like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event, so millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
7 minutes before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange, let's get to a mad dash. Netflix.
Why did you talk to me before the show began about a disturbing series?
Yes,
that everyone in the whole country is talking about.
Yeah, and the world.
The world.
The Squid Game.
By the way, they spent $1 billion in Korea. It's not like they spent 10 cents and they probably suddenly hit a home run.
And all of it in South Korea, I would point out.
Yeah, well, North Korea is not. that's much more of a, when you think of it, that was more, it was Scorsese. That kind of thing. Or maybe Renoir during that period of No. Okay, so Netflix, three different firms, Jefferies, Truist, and Baird all say, look, it's back. They all raised the price targets. And the underlying theme is the grand illusion that is Squid. And I think that when you see this kind of thing, you remember, wait a second, COVID stopped productions. Now they're back. And this thing has become, they're putting the end back in Fang. Fang is in.
It's a global phenomenon, this show, and of course, as you say, produced out of Korea, which just shows the power of Netflix as a global platform,
right,
in part because they can take something from there. Here it becomes a huge hit, but and in other places around the world. Now, by the way, if you haven't seen it,
you should stick her to filing.
Now, deeply, I'm not sure what it actually
reflects about human nature. You
know what's deeply disturbing?
How these analysts missed this whole move because they didn't know about Squid. They thought it was Squid Work, okay? It's like, what's this deal with Squid Work? Krabby Patty? No, fools. It's about Squid.
All right. Well, you haven't watched it yet.
Well, my wife says it's too violent.
But you're going to.
No, she said she thinks the worst thing we should ever watch, the toughest, is when we watch Led Tasso, which is the mean Ted Lasso. She finds him frightening.
It is extremely violent. And
Ted Lasso?
Dystopia. No, Squid Work. Squid Game. All right, we got an opening bell coming up 5 minutes before we get started. Stay with us. By the way, don't forget Gary Kelly, CEO of Southwest, going to join us as well. Keep it here.
But I don't want to be as both of them. I don't care. It makes no difference to me. I don't think you should smoke cigarettes either. You know, but now it comes into like, okay, that's Jamie. Now, JP Morgan. Our clients are adults. They disagree. That's what makes markets. So if they want to have access to buy or sell Bitcoin, you know, we can't custody it, but we can give them legitimate, as clean as possible access.
That's Jamie Dimon weighing in on Bitcoin yesterday at the Institute of International Finance's annual event. Made some other headlines on supply chain and loan growth, but what do you make of his thoughts on Bitcoin?
I love the arrogance of Jamie. I happen to like Jamie, so don't take it wrong, Jamie. I know you watch. Our clients, he says, basically don't want it. Okay, so I have a lot of Ethereum. What do I want to do? I want to go to JP Morgan. I've been a customer for 40 years. No, I got to go to some outfit, buy now, sell later. I don't know what it is. And I get 8%, and I'm wondering how they do that. But I want to go to JP Morgan. No, he'll have none of that. What? The customer, David, is right.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was going to say. But the customer's right.
Our customers don't. Jamie, you are not the one who can tell me what's worthless and what's not. And by the way, if it's worthless, but it's selling it at $3,000, I mean, it ain't worthless. It's got a price. And I'm not, you know, I'm not Mike Nova guy. Well, I have the luck. But I mean, give me a break. I'm a customer. Give me what I want. I'm not alone.
Well, essentially, he's saying the customer has the right to be foolish, right? That's his point.
Well, the First Amendment protects my stupidity now that I bought a farm with how much money I made with Bitcoin. And there's this Asian mill, Milford, this Eurasian thing is taking over my ponds. Terrible, terrible invasive species of plants. I've been working on this thing.
It's always something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always something.
There's the CNBC real-time exchange of the big board. It's a Core Wireless celebrating its listing via SPAC at the NASDAQ. It's WM Technology, a software infrastructure provider to the cannabis industry.
Wow.
The other big...
That industry's gaffed so many people. The only one that's been any good was the REIT, industrial, where you can, you know, store your cannabis. David, cannabis has been horrible.
Yes, it has had a very rough go.
Which were SPACs or cannabis?
Well, they both,
someone emailed me about three SPACs. No, I'm not going to mention him. I like the guy. So how about, let's put on some SPACs. No! I don't put any SPACs. Jesus, you know what? There is a Hippocratic Oath even for people on air. I tell you, a Hippocratic Oath for anchors. First, do no harm.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, that's
although
why I haven't, like,
there is, I mean, it's funny because they've fallen so much. I haven't talked about SPACs in a little while. That the Journal today did a story talking about, well, you can use them as just a rate of return vehicle because you can buy them at a discount and then redeem. And,
well,
you know, you can basically annualize a percentage return that's probably better than you get in the bond market, which some are doing. By the way, as I pointed out in previous reporting, there are others who are making choices about who's going to get the highest rate of redemptions, because then you conceivably can argue can orchestrate a short squeeze.
Well, okay, so here's in other words, you want to have a SPAC that comes on and says mine's going to go to a discount because the business is awful, you should buy me. There you go.
That's
persuasive.
Yeah, that is agreed. That is an interesting.
Yeah, that's not even. It's better than a lottery ticket, obviously.
Yep.
The other headline out of Diamond was on the supply chain issues, which he felt would not be an issue next year.
He's right.
We do have Intel and Samsung looking to restart some production at a Ho Chi Minh City plant. Toyota looking to restart some in December, Jim. That's being taken as glimmers of hope on supply chain.
GM would be, I think, at 65 and one for the fact that they made a big bet on Malaysia. Don't forget GlobalFoundries is going to do public offering. Taiwan Semi's going to report this week. I think it's going to be a much better number than the analysts think. I do think the supply chain was deeply related to the fact that they thought they had beaten COVID over there with their inferior shots. You know, when a 50% shot, that's kind of like the regular flu. Now they're starting to get the Pfizer shot. Things are going much better. I wonder if they'll ever get your Merck pill.
You wonder what? Where?
Well, what were you working on?
My fax set stopped working, so a distraction.
What
do you want to talk about with molnupiravir?
No, I'm just saying that if the Asians had not taken such a, you know, Asians were well ahead on trying to stop COVID, but then they got complacent, and they also got the wrong vaccine. They got a second-rate vaccine. Now, they didn't get the penicillin from the third man, but they got second-rate vaccine.
Okay, so right.
By the way, Sputnik turned out to be a second-rate vaccine. Just like it was a second-rate rocket.
They locked down, though, pretty effectively over there to contain the spread of the virus.
But then
they
had virus in Vietnam. We've known that from a lot of apparel.
Yes.
They got virus in Malaysia. Well, what I'm saying is that we thought their supply chain was unassailable. And it turned out not to be. And a lot of American companies relied on Malaysia. I've not been to Malaysia.
I haven't either.
I don't think I've been to Malaysia.
He's been to Vietnam recently.
Closest I came to Malaysia was reading.
I've been to Malaysia.
Goldman Sachs in Malaysia. It was not that complicated.
But I was there a long time ago. Very long time ago.
Where?
Malaysia.
Was it like a stopover?
No, I was there in Kuala Lumpur for a few days.
Really?
On business. Yeah, I was covering emerging markets. It's like 1992.
You are amazing.
1992.
Hey, you were like three. No, you just never age. You know what? I'm going to go to Southwest. I'm kind of done talking to you.
Yes.
All right? Done hugging you, too. I feel like something's coming over me. All right. Southwest shares are edging higher this morning, thank heavens. The airline's hoping to normalize the schedule by tomorrow. Normalize is an odd term because I expect normal from Southwest. The wave of cancellations in the past few days. Wave of cancellations, by the way, let's go back earlier in the spring. This is suboptimal. So joining us now is Southwest Airlines Chairman and CEO Gary Kelly. Gary, I got to tell you, you do not shy away. I said you got to come on, and here you are. Gary, because you are so good and so deserving of the respect, could you please tell us what you see going on? Because this is not you, and it's not Southwest.
Hey, morning, Jim. Great to be with you. It's been a really rough weekend, and obviously I really feel for our customers and our people that are trying their best to serve our customers. But when an airline gets behind, it's hard to catch up. So if you go back to Friday, basically the FAA had a series of delay programs that were implemented that covered all of Florida, every single one of our stations, including a 7-hour ground stop at Orlando. You'll have to ask the FAA what was the cause of all of that. But about half of our airplanes touch the state of Florida. We're one of the largest airlines in the country. So by the end of the day, we had significant numbers of airplanes and flight crews that were totally out of position. And as any aviation expert knows, it just takes several days to get everything back aligned. So we had a pretty good day yesterday, far fewer cancellations than what we were experiencing Saturday and Sunday. And today was pretty much shaping up to be a normal day. As usual, we have other issues that we have to deal with, whether it's weather or other ATC delays across the country. But for the most part, today's pretty much back to normal.
Okay, Gary, I understand that the weather-related issues, Florida, didn't really see that much cancellations from other companies in your industry, but there's a lawsuit that was filed. Southwest Airlines Pilots Association. It's in the Northern District of Texas. And what disturbed me about it earlier this year is they say that basically you're using illegal tactics or a form of asymmetrical warfare negotiations. Gary, you know when you read this, and then you read about the Texas governor who says, listen, we're going to be against mandates. I see, wait a second, maybe vaccines are an issue, maybe labor problems, of which Southwest Air has not historically had. So you understand how we quickly just pivot from Florida and FAA to wondering what happened here with the pilots.
Well, yeah, again, I think that we're uniquely affected because we have so many of our flights that touch Florida. All the airlines were impacted on Friday. It was just more of an impact on us, and it just took us longer to recover. But all of our employees worked very hard through the weekend, and it's tough on our customers, but it's also tough on our people. So they did a phenomenal job. There's absolutely no issue in working with our employees. Talking about the vaccine mandate, there are some that have very strong views on both sides of that issue. And, you know, it's not, as I think you probably know, I've never been in favor of corporations imposing that kind of a mandate. I'm not in favor of that, never have been. But the executive order from President Biden mandates that all federal employees and then all federal contractors, which covers all the major airlines, have to have a mandate, a vaccine in place by December the 8th. So we're working through that. We're urging all of our employees to get vaccinated. If they can't, we're urging them to seek an accommodation, either for medical or religious reasons. But my goal, obviously, is that no one loses their job. The objective here, obviously, is to improve health and safety, not for people to lose their jobs. So. Yes, we have some very strong views on that topic, but that's not what was at issue with Southwest over the weekend.
All right, well, I still want to go over this. United has only 3% people not vaccinated. You have a $200 monthly surcharge, healthcare, if you don't get vaccinated. What do you have to make it so that people get vaccinated? And if they don't, what is the procedure?
We're encouraging them, and we're offering the equivalent of 2 days' pay for them to turn in their vaccination card. That compensates them, obviously, for the time that it takes and any after effects, from the vaccine. So it's an encouragement and, you know, not any kind of a stick, if you will.
Gary, all the same, the cancellations are being used by some to argue that this was a huge vaccine protest, in the words of Donald Trump Jr. on Twitter in the past 24 hours. I mean, how much can you push back on that? You say it was not at issue, but to what degree did it contribute to this problem at all?
Zero. I mean, again, we look at all of our employee behaviors in terms of absenteeism, in terms of people volunteering to come in and pick up what's referred to as open time, and they're all very normal. The president of our pilots union has been out talking to the media, confirming all of that. So I think people, again, that understand how airlines work, when you get behind, it just takes several days to catch up. And the fact that we're basically caught up yesterday and today supports the assertion that we're making here. But we were significantly set behind on Friday, and it just takes several days to catch up.
Gary, I feel awful doing this, but I got to go back in June. You had 2 days, technical issues, 500 flights canceled. I want to step back for a second. You're Southwest Air. I frankly don't care that there were problems with Florida, with FAA. You're Southwest Air. You solve these things. You got two. You have two outages. You had one. You had one in June. Maybe Southwest Air has to change its ways, that it can't be just shut down because of Orlando. Maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe you need to go more hub and spoke. This is your plane, your airline, and everyone knows that never, no cancellations, no problems. In fact, we have to ask about labor. In fact, we have to ask about sick out. Something's wrong at Southwest Air.
Well, I think very fair criticism, Jim. And so I was simply answering the question of what happened here over the weekend, not whether we should have been better prepared or have done something differently. So we operate a linear route network. We don't hub and spoke. We're probably the largest airline in terms of seats offered in the state of Florida. Again, every single airport in the state of Florida was impacted by this. So it's very unique. It's very unusual. It wasn't anything that Southwest caused. If you go back to the June outage, that was us. That was a technology outage, and those are few and far between. But it's been a rough summer, and I'm not offering any excuses. Our customers didn't get their best from Southwest Airlines. It's not what we want. We definitely have some staffing challenges as well that we've talked about before. So we have moderated our flight schedule and accelerated our hiring plans. So there were definitely steps underway to mitigate the issue. We were thinly staffed coming into the weekend, and that certainly didn't help things as we were trying to recover. But point well taken, and it's as usual, any company is a work in progress, and we've always got opportunities to improve. And you get no argument from me that this is not the kind of service that we want to offer from Southwest.
Fair enough.
Gary, it's David. I mean, when it comes to them, those opportunities to improve, where is your, and by the way, the next CEO, where is the focus going to be on that improvement, given what you've seen both this weekend and obviously from June? I know not necessarily related, separate issues, but still.
Not related at all. But I think in this particular case, it would help for us to have better tools to recover. So there aren't perfect optimization tools to reflow airplanes when we have a setback like we did on Friday. And then secondly, there's technology that's required to reschedule our flight crews. So we have flight attendants, we have pilots, we have airplanes. And once it gets behind, it's just difficult to get that back together. So I think the opportunity is to improve on that process. It's called repair. It's complicated, but we definitely have some good opportunities there, for the future.
Gary, finally, there's some commentary from some of the other carriers today about the holiday season, preparing for a robust travel period. Are you seeing that kind of booking in Q4?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the business side of things, you have the Delta variant, the surge in cases that occurred, you know, beginning back in June, and then eventually that has an impact on air travel, and it suffers. So that wave has turned over, and we've definitely seen some improvement in bookings there. So, yeah, we're looking forward to a strong holiday season, and we just want to be very focused on offering a high-quality schedule and experience for our customers.
I want to go deeper on this weather issue. IBM has a weather product. The Wall Street Journal seemed to indicate that maybe it was not up to snuff. There are questions about whether you had spent enough money on IT during the 500 flight cancellation in June. Are you underspending on IT, and have you over furloughed and therefore having trouble getting people back?
All great questions. I think the answer is, you know, a very emphatic no. We're not underspending. We suspended investing in some of our initiatives early on when the pandemic first unfolded in March, but we very quickly got back on track once the CARES Act payroll support program came through and made sure that we continued to make those investments. The two technology outages that occurred back in June were human error. So it wasn't a lack of technological capability. It was simply, in one case, not adhering to a procedure. So it happens to companies. Occasionally we just don't want it to happen very often. And obviously every time something like that happens, we try to learn from it. We've deployed new technology for reservations. We're in the process of deploying new maintenance, record-keeping software that supports all of our aircraft. One of the largest projects we've ever undertaken, probably the largest deployment in the airline industry in history. So we have wonderful technology. We have a wonderful technology department. They're very well resourced. I think, what, like a lot of companies, we definitely are having some hiring challenges. We're trying to get 5,000 people hired by the end of this year. We're about halfway there. But overall, technology is in pretty good shape in terms of staffing. And for the most part, our staffing challenges have moderated. I'd still like to have more cushion in the operation so we can absorb the kind of blow that we saw last Friday better.
All right. Thank you, Gary Kelly, Chairman and CEO of Southwest Air. Good luck to you, sir. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you, sir. You bet.
Satisfied with the answers?
I'm satisfied with the answers, but that doesn't make it into a better situation. I don't feel, I mean, there's a difference between mendacity and optimal. And it's a suboptimal situation where we've just heard a very honest depiction. David, what we never want to give someone credit when United is delivering. And Delta's delivering.
Yep.
And American Airlines delivering. And yes, it's good. Candor's great.
Yep.
But customer service is better.
But doing it right the first time is better, too.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. But listen, he's a very straightforward guy. It's funny. I remember when I did my first documentary on Walmart, they had a language they spoke, which was, that's an opportunity. And when they used it, I was like, what do you mean? It was every time they made a mistake. That's an opportunity. And he used the same language It's an opportunity to get better, which it is.
No, he's a great man. The company is a great company. I guess it just seems to be falling. It's like a Job-like situation developing here of biblical proportions. I don't want that. Old Testament is Job.
I got J-O-B. It. I'm with you. I'm not looking at you quizzically. I understand what you're talking about.
I think it does. It sort of relates to these weird dislocations in the labor market right now. And Southwest has a highly efficient structure and model that depends a lot more on efficiency at the gate.
Yes, 15-minute turnaround versus 30.
Yeah.
Look, I think you have to say maybe we're too dependent on Orlando. Maybe we have to rethink what we're doing. We may have spent a lot of money on IT, but did they really have the right weather forecast? I don't know. I do think that Gary Kelly coming on once again makes it better. But, you know, I don't want Gary Kelly. I'd like to go through a period where Gary Kelly doesn't have to come on.
Well, he's not. When is he stepping down as CEO? That's pretty soon, right?
Look, he's a great guy. I thought, just to tell the people at home, I felt terrible asking tough questions to Gary Kelly. I have tremendous esteem. I don't run an airline. He's a tremendous job. Who am I? I'm a second TV guy. But you got to ask tough questions.
We did lose a little bit of the bounce at the open. Dow's down 66 points. 10-year did get to 163 this morning. Take a look at how Treasuries are faring at the moment. One day after we saw some of those yields respond to the environment right now. We're going to get Fed minutes tomorrow, along with retail sales, CPI later on in the month. But you can see right now, 10-year, 1.596. Back in a moment. Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
Crowd Strike analyst meeting Medtronic. We're talking ESG. Not doing enough ESG in general. I'm changing that. People, that's what young people care about. They care about the planet. Some of, we just care about a dollar sign represented by a man no longer. That was the old days.
Really?
I got two kids who think that I'm just like a dividend.
Jim, we'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. We'll take a break here. Dow's up 41. Keep your eye on Facebook, 318.
Oh, I had great stuff on Facebook.
First time back to the 200-day since March.
It's the advisory board. I had great stuff. Can I stay? Can I stay on the next show?
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.